America is ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/getup. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/getup. That's netsuite.com/getup. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol, Connecticut this morning and delighted you've chosen to get up with us.
Well, Greeny, I've been watching you a lot, way too much the last couple months.
No doubles in ping pong because of social distancing.
You respect your elders, man.
Not even a little bit, Greeny.
Gee, I'm sick of you in these arguments, first of all.
Like most geniuses, I won't be fully appreciated until long after my time. Do you expect the Buccaneers offense with Tom Brady at quarterback to be great?
No.
The disrespect.
I think Fox bumped his head, man. I don't know what happened to Fox. I mean, somebody check him out, man. He's quarantined a little too long. I don't know what's going on.
I think I've changed my mind because Jeff's eyelashes got me asking questions of myself.
What is this?
They make me uncomfortable. Stop it! I'm not sure what I think about anything anymore.
I feel a need to jump in the middle of all of this.
Foxy, just tell G to get out of his feelings.
As long as you keep batting those beautiful eyelashes, I agree.
I have to leave it there.
It was just a perfect moment, and I love being a little part of it.
Tomorrow we'll have another UFC fight night from the Apex in Las Vegas. Number 3 ranked Curtis Blaydes takes on number 7 ranked Alexander Volkov in our heavyweight main event. The main card starts at 8 Eastern with the prelims at 5 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. And we welcome you back here to Get Up. It's just about 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. You're watching us without Mike Greenberg. I'm Ryan Smith in for him today. This morning's KBO game ran a little bit long, so we're with you until 11:30 p.m., and then after that, it's going to be First Take. But we've got a lot to get to, and let us get to a crucial point on whether baseball will be played or not. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred has rejected the union's most recent counteroffer to play baseball games at all. The MLBPA delivered a counterproposal Thursday that included a 70-game season, along with a universal DH, and expanded playoffs for the 2020 and 2021 seasons. Now, in a call with reporters yesterday, Manfred says this, and it's telling. This needs to be over. I told him, Tony Clark, 70 games was simply impossible given the calendar and the public health situation, and he went ahead and made that proposal anyway. Does that sound good to you? No. According to the union proposal, by the way, the players would have to report a week from today, so it's getting tight. Jeff Passan, I want to welcome you in along with Doug Glanville. Jeff, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, right now, Ryan, I wouldn't call this an impasse because an impasse is a legal term, as you know. But we're at a point where it feels like a stalemate right now. And ultimately, it's a question of whether Major League Baseball is either going to make a deal or going to impose a season. And that ultimately is going to be on Rob Manfred. If there is a proposal, it's probably going to come at some point this weekend. But in the end, this is going to be wrapped up on Monday. We're going to know how long of a season there is. We're going to know how many games there is. And we're going to know whether it was imposed or whether a deal came together.
You know what? We're at the point where you say it's going to be wrapped up on Monday. And I'll say, you know, I'll take it. At least we'll know. Doug, what's your reaction to all this?
Well, time is not working to the favor of either party. And you recognize that as we unfold in this health crisis, more information just comes in where the concerns just get higher, whether it's University of Texas football or whether it's just open society in general. So, you know, if you go back to the 1981 season, you talk about strike, those players know that there's much worse than just saber rattling back and forth in the media. There's been much worse scenarios with lockouts, strikes, court orders, injunctions. So they'll get this done. The question about the damage on the public landscape is always going to be out there. But they need to start getting in that room and staying in that room and coming out in the unified position. And as Jeff said, probably on Monday, one way or the other, I do think an imposition of the season will not bode well, especially given what we're all facing.
And Jeff, you know, I want to go back to you. You brought up legal terms, so I'm just going to put this out there. As a lawyer, you're negotiating a deal, and you come to the end, and it's not getting done, and you lay down the gauntlet. And you say, you know what? It needs to be done. That's why that wording is so telling by Manfred. So in that situation, you're waiting for the other side to blink. And if it doesn't go your way, the deal is off. Who do you think blinks first?
Well, the ball is in Major League Baseball's court right now, and that really puts it in a position of quite a bit of power. But I think the union feels like it has done well enough to this point. And because it has gotten to the point where they are going to have their full prorated salaries, that gives them the ability to sit here and say, you know, we won. It also, if Rob Manfred imposes, has the ability to grieve. And Rob Manfred knows that, and the owners know that, and they don't want to have that liability. They don't, in the end, want to be sitting there and potentially have $1 billion hanging over them because there was a bad faith argument to be made. And because of that, the impetus to make a deal makes sense. Going out there and saying, we're going to give you more baseball, we're going to come to a compromise, is a good thing in the end, but they are so frustrated right now with that it has taken as long as it has. And that frustration is met by the players as well. There should be baseball right now. Everybody knows this. Both sides recognize this. And the fact that they're here where they are is frankly embarrassing for the sport.
And, you know, you make me think of fans who, you know, so many people in this country are going through a tough time. People are hearing this discussion. And, Doug, they're saying, you know what? People are having trouble finding jobs, and these guys are squabbling over millions, if not billions, of dollars. They could just get back on the field if they would just agree to sit in a room and split the difference. What is the eventual blowback on what's happening now on the games if they're further delayed or if, in fact, they don't happen at all?
Well, if it doesn't happen at all, it's a complete disaster for the sport. But there's going to be pain, and we've seen this historically, 1994. You know, this carries out until you had McGuire and Sosa, Cal Ripken Jr., you had moments. And maybe those moments will still happen in the future, but the time between them is going to be very painful because people are aware of what we're facing, and you're watching other sports just start lining up. Okay, NBA. And you know, the opportunity for baseball to be the only game in town, so to speak, of these sort of big three sports is getting more and more lost as time marches on. So they have to recognize that. And you know, coming to this final stretch here, you know, by Monday, just looking at that turning point, they're going to have a vision to go with it. And that vision is much more powerful when you're unified.
All right. Monday is a big day, and hopefully it's good news for all us sports fans. Guys, thank you so much. Doug, stand by. We're going to come back to you in just a second because I want to turn to a story that has a connection to sports because leagues and teams are recognizing this for the first time. When you think of celebrating freedom and independence in this country, typically we think of the 4th of July, but June 19th or Juneteenth symbolically marks a different kind of freedom for Black Americans. Freedom from slavery, yes, but with a complicated irony that recent protests on police brutality, racism, and social injustice against Black Americans have made all too clear that the vestiges of slavery remain.
What is the meaning of freedom? Of equality? Is it words on a page? A proclamation or a law?
So, I demand change now?
Or is it something entirely different?
We gonna walk. We gonna say what we gotta say.
Juneteenth, also known as Jubilee Day, Emancipation Day, or Freedom Day, considered the oldest known celebration of the end of slavery in this country, is also a bittersweet recognition that even today, for Black Americans, true freedom and true equality is still a dream deferred. Slavery was outlawed January 1st, 1863, with the Emancipation Proclamation. Yet it wasn't until 2.5 years later, on June 19, 1865, more than 2 months after the Civil War ended, that Union General Gordon Granger read General Order No. 3 to slaves in Galveston, Texas, announcing
all slaves are free. As Black Americans left Texas, emigrating to other parts of the country, Juneteenth's recognition grew from local and regional celebrations, primarily in the South, to being recognized in all but three states. Often marked by parades, cookouts, baseball games, and other events in communities nationwide. But this symbolic holiday carries with it a painful irony. As the famed writer Ralph Ellison called it, the celebration of gaudy illusion. The illusion that true freedom and equality had been obtained when, in fact, institutions like sharecropping, then Jim Crow laws, school segregation, and now scores of other practices still existing today reinforce the notion of systemic racism against Black people in this country. Perhaps now is a different time. Protests against police brutality, racism, and social injustice around the country have led many institutions to recognize a day often ignored. The NFL announced this week Juneteenth will now be a paid holiday for all employees. And several NFL teams, including the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, followed suit, as did a handful of NBA teams led by the Atlanta Hawks and shoe giant Nike. The U.S. women's national soccer team invited followers to join a Juneteenth cookout, and several colleges are taking the day off. But will this new awakening, this acknowledgement of this country's brutal past and present, mean true freedom, true equality for Black Americans? 155 years after that monumental day in Texas, even in 2020, that remains to be seen.
I want to bring in Ryan Clark, Doug Glanville, to join us now to talk about Juneteenth. Ryan, I've seen leagues and teams, they're recognizing Juneteenth, the NBA also recognizing it recently, the Undefeated reporting. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I think the thoughts is obviously you, if you are Black and especially being from the South, this was something that was always important to you. This was something that was talked about in my household, but it wasn't recognized nationally. It wasn't recognized by some of the most important entities and organizations in America. And so I think this is another step toward America listening. This is another step toward major sports organizations listening. And I'm not necessarily sure they truly understand the meaning of it, or if this ever becomes, you know, no disrespect to these holidays, if this ever becomes July 4th or Independence Day, as it's called, or if it ever becomes Cinco de Mayo, because there's not going to be a ton of people at restaurants drinking tequilas. And but I do believe that just in recognizing it and saying, you know what, this is a paid holiday off. This is something that we know now that we can do. It's another step forward in society starting to acknowledge not only the struggles and oppression of the African-American people, but also some of the triumphs and the things that you celebrate. I get an opportunity to speak at a huge Juneteenth event here tomorrow in Baton Rouge. And that's the one thing I'm going to talk about is right now we're talking about the oppression. We're talking about the racism, the discrimination and the prejudice. But this is an opportunity to celebrate some of the good. This is an opportunity to point out the things that African-Americans have done that have not only contributed to our culture, but contributed to the culture of the United States, contributed to everyone. And so I love that people are listening. I love that people are doing and putting things into action. So much more needs to be done, but we have to acknowledge when people are starting to work toward a solution.
Yeah. And Doug Glanville, I want to bring in as well. You know, it's also been reported that the Dodgers and the Angels are recognizing Juneteenth as a company holiday. What are your thoughts on companies really seeming to at least acknowledge the holiday today, others giving paid time off?
Well, Ryan, I mean, acknowledgement is a big step. It's a step. And because, you know, being Black in America, the constant scrutiny and denial of your experience of, oh, you're imagining things or that didn't really happen this way. I think when you see these large scale influential bodies absolutely taking a stand and saying, no, this did happen, whether it's the Boston Red Sox in their statement, for example. So that's absolutely a step. We have to recognize that even with Juneteenth and the Emancipation Proclamation, there was still compromise. Abraham Lincoln wanted our country to unite. And so he said, well, we'll do it in these states under rebellion. There were still conditions. So we still have that comma of saying, yes, okay, slavery is bad, but we still have the vestiges of it and we're still dealing with that. And so we need to get to a value system of our country to say unilaterally, this is unacceptable, and connect the dots to how that actually still plays out in today's society on various systems, as you mentioned, education, housing, and so on. So it's a big step for acknowledgement to actually call it what it is. But we also have to remember how often in our history, Black America has been compromised as a negotiation when we should actually be taking an absolute position on it and say, this is part of our values. The First Amendment is only 45 words, and it lives and breathes because of the spirit of what we put behind it. Otherwise, it's just words on paper. So we have to continue that. And these leaders in sports, these teams, people pay attention to what they say. People pay attention, and they have that type of influence. And now they can take those steps in words and try to really make sustainable change.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. It's also a day of understanding. It's a time where people, and I've seen this in some of the statements, take the time to learn about culture. Take the time to learn about Black culture. But more than that, take the time to learn about slavery and the path to where we are now and why we have some of the problems we do in society. I think some of that understanding is part of the key, not just hearing sound bites and things. It's part of the key towards making true change. And Ryan, you said something interesting. You talked about how teams were doing their best and how this is an opportunity. Teams are recognizing this. Leagues are recognizing this. What more do you want to see them doing today to really make a difference?
Well, I think it's more than just recognizing this day. It's more than just having phone calls or Zoom conversations about the Black experience. It's about if you're truly listening, if you're truly understanding what the plight of Black America is, it's about getting out there and putting your face to it. I mean, so many times we hear people or we see statements or we see little videos, but we never see them in the communities. We never see the owners or the executives getting some of these young African American players or some of these young African American execs in the rooms that they need to be to change laws, to change legislation, to change regulations. And I always go back to this, and I know, you know, you have to be very careful about how you speak in this. I remember the last election, and I remembered what it looked like in many of the suites of the owners in the NFL. And if you're going to align yourself with your players, if you're going to say, we understand, if you're going to celebrate Juneteenth as a holiday and understand the history of slavery, the history of systematic racism, of systemic racism, the history of institutional racism, the reason that the stars of sports are the activists of today is one reason. It's racism. It's the history of racism, not allowing generational wealth, not allowing these opportunities for Black Americans to succeed, to ascend, to be in positions of power. And that's why the overnight millionaires that play sports have to speak out, help those people get to where they need to be to make actual change. Because acknowledging a holiday doesn't change the hearts and minds of people, but rules, regulations, and laws can. And if there's enough punishment and justice done when Black people are wronged or harmed or what we see most times killed, if there is justice brought every single time, then there will be change made. Until there's change made at the top, there will not be change made at the bottom. And for so long, African Americans have been at the bottom.
Absolutely. Well said. And thank you both. And by the way, you talk about action. I know both of you guys are very active in not just talking about the message, but actually doing something about it in your communities. And thank you for that as well. All right. We're going to be talking about Juneteenth all day here on ESPN. Coming up next, it's First Take, followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live and The Jump. Then at 4, UFC Live previews Fight Night from Vegas tomorrow. A two-hour Sports Center is at 5 with the PTI guys joining at 5:30. And then we cap the day off with Sports Center at 11 Eastern. Coming up on Get Up, can you imagine a fall without football? The NFL responds to an ominous warning from the nation's top infectious disease doctor. Plus, there are new COVID concerns in college football. And on the field, no team underachieved more than the Cleveland Browns in 2019. Wait until you hear which team one of our analysts says will follow that formula in 2020.
This is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back with you on Get Up, and we're talking about the Cleveland Browns. They entered 2019 with high expectations, but it didn't take long for things to fall apart. They started out 2-6, including a 43-13 home loss in week one against the Titans. The Browns added Odell Beckham, but he and Baker Mayfield never got on the same page, really. Mayfield led the AFC in interceptions, while Beckham averaged a career-low 65 yards per game. And defensively, things weren't much better, particularly stopping the run. The Browns ranked third worst in rush defense last season, both on a per-game and a per-carry basis. Now, let's bring in Ryan Clark and Mike Tannenbaum to talk about who might be this year's Browns. And, Mike, I'll start out with you. What do you think? Who might follow in their footsteps?
Oh, looks like they're frozen for a little experienced, bit.
Oh, there you go, Mike. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. I'll still stay with the Dallas Cowboys. They have a new head coach in Mike McCarthy. Even though he's experienced, he still hasn't had an offseason with his team. And obviously, it all begins and ends with Dak Prescott. If he's not there, if they get past July 15th without an extension, we may not see him till right before opening day. I know that Kellen Moore is still the offensive coordinator, but it's still a new head coach. And we got to remember, they were number one in offense last year, so they can only go backwards. They have a rookie wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. And again, without any continuity and reps, I think the expectations are a little bit too high for the Dallas Cowboys this year.
Okay, Ryan, I wonder if you agree. Who's your Browns of this year?
The Browns, probably. I mean, I know we're gonna try to throw it on Tampa Bay and be like, oh, they, and now we're saying Dallas. I don't think Dallas is going to be great anyway. I told y'all that last year. Everybody was like, Ryan, oh, you're so crazy. Dallas is going to go to the Super Bowl. I was like, guys, Dallas is going to be average. And they were. Didn't even make the playoffs. So I don't see much different from them this year. But I still think the Cleveland Browns right now are a team we're expecting to be better. We're a team that we're expecting to get into the playoffs because we think that Kevin Stefanski can make that much of a difference over Freddie Kitchens. But I think that this team still has a lot of holes to fill. And without having an offseason that said, you know what, let's come together, let's gel together, let's be a team that's focused on football and winning and not anything else, I don't think they've had that opportunity. So I believe that the Browns fall about where they were last season. And listen, with an extra playoff team, maybe they can get in, but I don't see them excelling to the heights we saw them at last year, nor improving enough this year to make a difference over the team and over the success or non-success of the last season.
Okay, so I have to do this, guys. I got to bring in the Bucks because we just can't stop ourselves. Mike, what do you think about the Bucks? Could they be in this spot?
They could be. I mean, I think they're going to be good, but again, there's going to be growing pains. Everyone's talking about Tom Brady and Drew Brees on opening day. That's really unfair. Drew Brees has been with Sean Payton for more games, ironically, for everyone except Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Continuity matters. So I think there's going to be some bumps in the road in Tampa. But at the end of the year, though, I think they'll be there because they have too many weapons on offense. So I don't see them falling short the way the Browns did a year ago. So I think they're going to be good. I just don't know if they're going to be great from day one.
Ryan, a couple seconds left. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree. I didn't think that they would win the NFC South because they'd start a little slow and the Saints would. But I expect them to be one of the tougher outs in the playoffs in the NFC. With that quarterback, those weapons, they'll find ways to win games.
All right, there you have it. Guys, thank you so much. And by the way, let's keep it on the Bucs. Can we expect the same old Gronk after a year away from football? And how critical is he to Tom Brady's success? Get up. Coming back.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
WBO junior featherweight title holder Emmanuel Navarrete is boxing's most active champ, and he's back at it tomorrow night at TBS Teca Studios in Mexico to take on Uriel Lopez in the main event. Coverage of the main card begins at 11 Eastern right here on ESPN, ESPN app, and ESPN Deportes. And we welcome you back to Get Up. It's 11 a.m. Eastern. You're watching Ryan Smith instead of Mike Greenberg today. And no, I'm not Stephen A. Smith. Let me just tell you what happened. This morning's KBO game ran a little bit long, so we're with you till 11:30. And then right after that, Stephen A. and Max and First Take will be coming up. But let's get up and go through some of the news around the sports world. Starting with baseball, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred rejecting the Players Association's proposal for a 70-game regular season schedule. Now, Manfred told reporters, quote, "This needs to be over." Atlanta Dream guard Renee Montgomery announced Thursday that she will sit out the 2020 WNBA season to work on off-court initiatives like the Black Lives Matter movement. Montgomery is the first WNBA player to opt out of the season. And SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey threatened to not host any future conference championship events in Mississippi until the state changes its flag. Mississippi is the only state that still has a Confederate flag symbol, a blue cross with the 13 stars on its flag. And free agent wide receiver Josh Gordon has applied for reinstatement to the NFL. Gordon was suspended indefinitely by the league on December 16th, his sixth suspension since 2013 season, and the fifth for some sort of substance abuse. All right, take it to the Bucs. Meanwhile, Adam Schefter reporting that Bucs assistant coach has tested positive for COVID-19, and two other assistants have been quarantined. Tampa coaches had just returned to the facility this week. Just when we are starting to get fired up for the season, this comes. Earlier on Thursday, Dr. Anthony Fauci expressed concerns about the NFL's ability to safely hold the 2020 season. Here's what he said. He told CNN, quote, "Unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall." Now, on a Zoom call to announce that Hard Knocks would feature the Rams and the Chargers, Sean McVay joked with Anthony Lynn about the COVID-19 guidelines.
I mean, is this crazy, Coach Lynn? We're talking about some of this stuff, and we're playing football. I mean, we're going to social distance, but we play football? This is really hard for me to understand all this. I don't want to be I don't get it. I really don't.
I know, it's tough. We're going to have to test them every day.
There you go, echoing Dr. Anthony Fauci's words. Let's bring in Ryan Clark, Mike Tannenbaum, and Jeff Darlington. Jeff, what are you hearing about the possibility of a bubble format in the NFL?
Well, how about Anthony Lynn there just having no idea what to say to Sean McVay in that moment? But that kind of speaks to sort of everything that we're going through right now. Nobody really knows the right answer or what to do here. I can tell you, though, after hearing skepticism from Dr. Fauci and then some skepticism from Sean McVay, I've spoken to no executives with any teams or league executives who have hinted or insinuated to me that they are interested in potentially going with this bubble format. There's just so many technical issues, the first of which is the fact that each team has 53 active players plus a practice squad. That in itself makes it far more of a logistical challenge than, say, basketball or even baseball. So Look, contingency plans certainly have been discussed. A lot of different ones. I mean, here's an interesting one. Bruce Arians from the Bucks pointing out that maybe he should have a quarterback stay away from the facility, like a third emergency quarterback who stays away from the facility in case his other quarterbacks, yes, including Tom Brady, were to have to be quarantined as a result of COVID. So you at least have somebody who could play the position. The NFL currently in discussions about increasing practice squads. So you'd have maybe you'd have instead of four or six players, you would have maybe 10 or even 12 players on a practice squad. That would make for more availability. But those are the types of contingencies currently being discussed, not the idea of playing a bubble, basically having all the teams go to one place. That just hasn't even really been a topic of serious conversation with the NFL.
Which makes it interesting, Jeff, that you say that, because if you've got health officials saying this is ideal and you've got the NFL not doing that, you wonder if health officials will start trying to tell that directly to the NFL and what that could mean. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on the bubble model in the NFL.
Yeah, well, let's start with something very fundamental. The facilities aren't big enough, especially when you have 80, 90-man rosters. So one of the things that we're hearing is that the rosters may shrink from 90 to 80. And interestingly, one of the things that a number of teams are considering is rotating offense and defense. So you may have the offensive players in the building. Defensive players may be having meetings virtually. Teams are really taking a hard look at this. And something else that's interesting is teams are actually preparing for coaches going down. There's been so much about quarterbacks and rosters, but what happens if your play caller goes down the night before the game or your head coach? So a number of teams are going to be practicing this summer where they're assuming that their coaching staff could be impacted as well. So there's a number of scenarios that are going to be played out during the summer, and everyone obviously wants to mitigate their risk.
And that's going to be the key, making sure it's as safe as possible. But Ryan, I think we already know that it can't be perfectly safe. So if you're a player or from your perspective, what are your thoughts?
I mean, if you're a player, I think, one, you're extremely nervous about them having a season, like if a season can even take place. You're also nervous in participating in it. But when you think about the bubble concept and what that would take, let's go back to earlier this offseason and remembering a picture of Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott during a time where everyone is supposed to be social distancing or quarantining and they're having a party, and they caption the picture and it's almost like, y'all are scared of COVID, but this is basically the feeling you got from it. And now Ezekiel Elliott tests positive for COVID-19. And so there are also going to be some of those players that don't truly take this seriously, that won't be comfortable going into a bubble because either they feel they may not need to or they don't want to. And we're talking about an extended season. This isn't a shortened MLB season. This isn't a playoff scenario for the NBA. We're trying to have an entire season with 32 teams, with 53 active players, plus more. I think that's going to be extremely difficult. So unless a protocol is set in place where a team has a larger amount of people to pick from, I think it's going to be very difficult to have a season go off without a hitch. And so in NFL has to watch the MLB. They have to watch the NBA and pick up as much as they can to have a season this year.
And, Mike, I as I think about this bubble situation, I think about this. If you don't have it, basically, health officials are saying you might be increasing your chances for exposure. So how do you, as a GM, talk to players about what they can and cannot do away from the football field while also simultaneously not trying to limit what they can do in this bubble or try to create a bubble that could limit what they do?
We're all in this together. We just have to make the best choices and decisions reasonably possible, and none of us have the answers. Ryan C. just touched on it. You know, we're going to learn a lot from the NBA, certainly MLB, NHL. So there's not any perfect solutions. There are going to be risks. And I think the message to your coaches, to your players is be smart, use common sense, wear a mask, sanitize when you can. And within reason, hopefully not many players will get it. But we have to know that going into the season, it's truly going to be unprecedented. And we're going to be talking about quarterbacks maybe not available on 12 hours notice. And it's going to be make for a very interesting narrative this season.
And not only that, what happens if a number of players gets exposed or gets the virus that makes it uncomfortable for others to be around them? How does that play out? So many things to think about. Guys, thank you so much. Let's talk about college football, right? 13 players from the Texas football team have tested positive or are presumed to test positive for the coronavirus. The school said all 13 players are self-isolating and 10 more identified through contact tracing. are in self-quarantine but asymptomatic at this time. Now, Texas is not the only FBS school that has dealt with athletes, specifically football players, testing positive for COVID-19. Texas A&M, Houston, and Iowa State have all reported that athletes from their program have tested positive as well, with Iowa State reporting that they have 10 such cases. Playing college football in the midst of a pandemic, Lincoln Riley feels good about Oklahoma's plan.
Well, I'm confident in our plan. It has been not from a sense of like I told you so or anything like that. It's been nice to kind of see what's going on at these other schools, have conversations with these people. Our medical personnel have conversations with these people. And so I think we've been able to learn some without our players being at risk. And so that has certainly been helpful.
I'll tell you what, if we're talking college football, we got to bring in Paul Feinbaum. He joins us along with Ryan Clark. Paul, as these positive tests are starting to emerge, how has your overall feeling about the upcoming season changed over the past 2 weeks?
I've gone from incredibly positive to pause right now, Ryan. And I say pause because it is too early. We don't know yet. But I'm hearing more doom and gloom this week than probably any week since maybe early to mid-April. Nobody's really saying it because nobody wants to say it. Because if you say the college football season is doubtful, then the thought police comes after you for disregarding the nation opening. But privately, many people are starting to doubt where we are.
Wow, imagine that. Ryan, are you starting to doubt where we are?
Oh, I absolutely am. And I get the opportunity to have conversations with college coaches because obviously my son plays at Arizona State University. And one of the coaches told me, like, I've told the guys, you basically have to give up a year of life away from the football field in order to try to get this season done in 2020. And he's expressed how important it is that you not only think of yourself, but you think of your teammates, you think of your coaches and the other people that you will be around in order to have a season. And so this week, especially with many of the COVID test results coming out, this is the first week I've thought to myself, you know what? We may not be able to move so fast on our excitement for an upcoming college football season.
Paul, we discussed the significance of Anthony Fauci's comments on the NFL game. How do you think that impacts college football?
I think college football is even more difficult than the NFL. I mean, there's nowhere to go to be in a bubble. You have football programs all over the country with different economic situations, different testing protocols. And I think even if we get to the season, and let's say we're still hopeful, you will see schools that they cannot play or may not be able to play a full season. I think it's going to be a jigsaw puzzle of epic proportions.
You know, Ryan Clark, in some ways I see this as a litmus test for how schools treat college athletes because the language is always we care about the athletes first. We put the students first. But if you see guys getting 10, 12, 13 tests, even at this stage in the season, but you're still going forward with the season, what does that say to college athletes?
I mean, it says to college athletes that college football is big business. But haven't we always known that, Ryan? That's not something that is new to people who have followed this sport. They've just been able to cloak it because they've never been in this situation. But these Power Five schools, especially these schools with these powerhouse football teams, that's how you fund so much of what goes on at those universities. And so right now, these colleges have to be scared. They have to understand, and they're looking at the way that they're losing money and how do we continue to be a functioning university? And that's with getting football players on the field, and there are going to be some corrections made because of these positive results to the COVID test, and players are going to have to adhere to this during this time. This is the test period, because if they can't keep people from testing positive now, there will not be a season that starts not only on time, but maybe ever.
Oh, man, think about that. All right, guys, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Coming up, Rob Gronkowski. He's showing off his new uniform, but can we expect the same old Gronk after a year away from football? And how critical is he to Tom Brady's success? Going to talk about all of that and more coming up on Get Up. But first, a little sneaky Hembo time. This one's for Ryan Clark. All right, Ryan, so here it is. Who leads the NFL in red zone touchdown catches over the last decade? Ryan, we want you to think about that one. We're going to give you the answer when we come back. Get Up right here on ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day?
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Back to a little sneaky Hembo time. All right, RC, this is for you. Who leads the NFL in red zone touchdown catches over the last decade, Ryan? Wait, he just got off
Julio
his computer.
Julio Jones?
Did you see him lean up and get
is
off
it
his computer?
Julio Jones?
Oh, Julio Jones. Okay. No,
it wasn't.
Okay.
Is it Julio Jones?
It is not. I'll give you another try. One try is all you get. Jimmy Graham, my friend. Jimmy Graham.
No way. No way.
Yes.
Absolutely not.
Yes. You don't believe it? Gronk,
absolutely
number
not.
Two. You came. You didn't come close at all. Why am I even saying that? And Hembo, by the way, he stands by his answer, just so you know. So don't shake your head no at it. By the way, speaking of Gronk, number two on that list, he received an early Christmas present on Thursday. Look at him. He's like my kids when they get a Hess truck. Look at this. Yeah. Brand new Bucks jerseys. Gronk, of course, came out of retirement and was traded to Tampa Bay earlier this offseason after the Bucks signed Tom Brady. Couldn't be happier. And unsurprisingly, Brady has performed much, much better with Gronk on the field as compared to when he is not on it. Over the last decade, his QBR on third downs, as well as in the red zone, is substantially higher when he's got his favorite tight end as a target. And by the way, look at Gronk. He's going to look good in that Tampa Bay colors, I'll tell you that. Let's bring in Ryan and Mike once again. Ryan, what are the expectations for Gronk this season?
Listen, I don't think my expectations are for him to challenge Travis Kelce and George Kittle to be the top pass-catching tight end in the league. But what I do think is important is he's going to be there for those situational football moments that Tom Brady needs him for. Yes, they're going to get the ball to Godwin. They're going to get the ball to O.J. Howard. You're going to get the ball to Mike Evans. But Rob Gronkowski is going to be the guy in the fourth quarter, the guy in the red zone, the big third down pass catcher. And I also believe we're going to see him show up more late in games and late in the season. This is a season where you can put him on a pitch count because you have so much activity going on around him. But when Tom Brady needs that security blanket, when Tom Brady needs to be comfortable, I think that's when Rob Gronkowski will be at his best for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and all the talent around him will allow him to stay healthy, take less hits, play less plays, and be there for the important moments.
And you know, you think about this, Gronk's got 10 touchdown passes. He caught 10 touchdown passes. The last time he did that in a season, 2015, he's missed 16 games over his last three seasons. Mike, what do you think about his production?
Well, unfortunately, I was on the receive end of a lot of it between the Jets and the Dolphins. You know, 68% of all his catches in the red zone are touchdown, and that felt like 168% trying to defend him. So I agree with Ryan. It's not going to be quantity. It's going to be quality. And nothing is more frustrating than all week long you hear Gronk in the red zone, Gronk in the red zone. We're going to double team him. And then what happens? He still scores a touchdown. So I think he's not going to play as much. I agree with Ryan, but he'll be there for the impactful plays. And the other thing we got to remember is he will create production for others because he will at least get double teamed. So when we hear about Chris Godwin or Mike Evans having incredible production, that goes back to Rob Gronkowski. So he's going to be impactful. It just may not be on the stat sheet.
Okay, and you talk about quality. Ryan, talking about the pitch count, or we can call that load management too. Mike, you look at this, load managed, maybe watched in terms of how much he plays. What are your thoughts on that? Because when it talks about quality, if you're saying that's the key, I wonder if they hold him out at certain times or only play him in a quarter. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And Tampa Bay's done a good job. Cam Brate, O.J. Howard, those are really good NFL tight ends. So this is going to be a long season. We've talked about the pandemic, how that's going to impact rosters. And I think they're going to bring him along slowly. It looked like he lost a bunch of weight being away from the game. So they practice on grass. They play on grass. The weather's great. So I think over the course of the season, they can ramp him up. And again, if he's out there and Ryan C. as a former safety, the last thing he wants to see is a guy this big in the red zone. So, again, even if it's 15 yeah. plays, those could be difference-making plays, right?
What do you think,
Absolutely.
Ryan?
No, he's exactly right. Rob Gronkowski is a matchup problem. And when you have all those pieces on the outside and a quarterback like Tom Brady, he's going to go to the biggest matchup positive that they have, and that would be Rob Gronkowski in many cases in the red zone. And so you don't have to overuse him. There's so many other places that you can go with the football, but he's going to make big plays for this team and pay huge dividends down toward the end of the season.
A lot of weapons on that Bucs team. We will see how this plays out. Thank you, guys. And by the way, why don't we just run the hurry up right now, bring in my man Jeff Darlington. Jeff, tell us the latest on Tua as he rehabs his hip.
Well, Tua, Ryan, is in the building. How about that? Tua, the rookie quarterback for the Dolphins, making his way down to South Florida. He's able now to train in the Dolphins facility to rehab that hip because while COVID doesn't allow most players in, they loosened restrictions recently to allow players like Tua to enter the building. So that's a good news for a player who now gets the opportunity to kind of feel his way through a new building. A little bit of a silver lining for a guy continuing that. Not as good of news up in New York for the Jets when it comes to Jamal Adams, the safety. Asking the Jets for a trade. Ultimately, though, I'm told by my Jets sources, they have no real inclination to trade him. They haven't gotten any types of offers from teams yet that would make them pull the trigger on such a deal. He's a player who has 2 years remaining on his contract. I anticipate this getting uglier before it gets better because I also don't see that big contract coming from the Jets anytime soon. 49ers. Wide receiver Deebo Samuel, not great news here for him either. He's going to be out for about 6 to 8 weeks, going to have his foot in a walking cast after suffering a Jones fracture going through workouts in Nashville with some teammates. Generally, this is a touchy injury. You can really re-injure it pretty easily, so he's going to have to be very careful with this moving forward. That timeline would put him out for the first couple weeks of the season if it were to hold as of now. So Deebo Samuel, a guy probably not going to be available to the 49ers in the very early goings of the season.
Very tough blow for the 49ers there. Jeff Darlington, thank you very much. All right, well, coming up, get up, more get up, but in less than 7 minutes, First Take it will be with you. Stephen A., Max, discussing whether Jamal Adams is justified in demanding a trade. Plus, does Colin Kaepernick really want to play? First Take coming up in just a few minutes.
The SB goes to Jason McElwain.
Thank you, ESPN, for giving me this award, and thank you to all the people who voted for me. I would just like to thank my brother Josh for introducing me to the game of basketball. Also, my parents for their support. I would like to thank my friends back home in Rochester, especially my teammates on the basketball team. Most importantly of all, I would like to thank my loving coach for giving me the chance to play. Thank you, God.
Best of ESPYs is presented by Capital One. Tune in to the ESPYs presented by Capital One on Sunday, June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
That's all we have today on Get Up. We loved having you with us. Greeny's going to be back with you on Monday, and I hope you take the time to celebrate Juneteenth and learn a little about the history of the day. That knowledge can help make change. Thanks so much for joining us. See you soon.